Hello and welcome to Dyslexia Explored. My name is Darius Nomdaron, your host, and today we're going to talk about adult dyslexia, discovering you're dyslexic in adulthood. Today's guest I'd like to invite is Sanjay Kapoor. Sanjay, it's great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Darius. It's such a pleasure to meet you and connect with you. So it's my pleasure. Thank you.
It's interesting because what we're going to talk about today is you've discovered that you're dyslexic and ADHD over the last few months by, you know, looking at some of the material from Made by Dyslexia and podcasts and Google searching and so forth. And you've come to the awareness of that. And it's really going to be interesting to hear that journey, because I think there's a number of people who listen to this podcast who've maybe started listening because they're thinking for their child, but they're also thinking about themselves. And also over this Dyslexia Explored journey, we're also discovering about ADHD as well, because often people think, oh, it's either dyslexia or ADHD, but it's often very much both. And so that's part of the conversation today. So Sanjay, it's great to have you here. I like to ask people, you know, what was the wake-up call to you waking up to dyslexia?
Thank you. It's once you have, or if you think you have something different going on, right? So something different going on. I think in my gut, I kind of knew there's something I need to discover. There's something is, I am reasonably intelligent. I am able to think. I am able to do a lot of things. But still there's some piece of the puzzle is missing. So that in that journey, I just, you know, by in the past, you know, some with some of my teacher friends decades ago, you know, they mentioned some learning differences and they said, oh, dyslexia is like that. I said, you know, I might have something like that, you know, but never really, you know, I said, I struggle with writing, reading, you know, it's a lot of effort for me. So that was like a very early, you know, many years. Then I moved on to different things. But more recently, I stumbled upon on a LinkedIn Made by Dyslexia and started reading about it. And there were some surveys, not survey, but kind of assessments, online assessments. So I said, oh, let's take a look. You know, so I took those assessments and those kind of said, you know, you might want to get tested because it's pointing towards having a dyslexia. So then, you know, I start to learn about it. I'm curious mind. My mind is very curious and I like to learn about things, especially to do with mind. That fascinates me, you know, mind.
Yes, your mind, yeah.
I just get fascinated by the capacity of a mind and the diversity of the mind, right?
Yeah.
So then I started learning a lot about dyslexia by going to different podcasts, YouTube, you know, on internet. And then I got to hear one of the podcasts when I love walking and I put on a podcast and go. And then I stumbled upon learn about learning disabilities podcast. And that was my kind of a discovery, first step.
Yes.
In the process, yeah.
And you came across a podcast where I was on that podcast with them.
Absolutely,
and yeah. Okay, and that's where the connection with Explored came along. That's great.
Yeah, so there was a great podcast about, you know, how to organize your thoughts, and you were on that podcast about Bullet Map Academy. So I love that idea, you know, to organize, and that's the connection we hear.
Yes. So what I'm interested in is why did you pay attention to the LinkedIn article now and not 5 years ago, 1 year ago? You know, what was it now that woke you up to it? What was the What was happening before you? Because you don't just open up an article on dyslexia, just, oh, I'll fancy. What was just before it?
Yeah, so before that, as I said, I had something in, that I might be something, so I started reading, and there were like it was talking about how dyslexia could be like a lot of people with innovative ideas and innovators and entrepreneur, they have these kind of thinking. So that got me curious, and that's the kind of, it just clicked. I think
I see.
sometimes you see something, but you don't really pay attention to it. And when it's the right time and right information,
Yes.
the connections are made, so.
Sanjay, what's interesting here in this story, I think, is that you're actually a report writer. So you've discovered you've got dyslexia and you've been through a career where you had to write a lot of reports. And this is what's so fascinating often about adult dyslexia is that often people with dyslexia have really so many ideas, so many solutions, can analyze a situation and put forward a proposal of what happens next. And sometimes that means it needs to be turned into a report. And this is the perennial challenge I think so many people have with dyslexia who are very high functioning. They're in a meeting, they propose something and they go, "Why don't we do it like this?" And the person in charge goes, "My goodness, that's a fantastic su suggestion. Could you just," and these are the dreaded moments, dot dot dot, "could you just put that in writing in an email and send it to me so I can send it to the right person?" And then you're like, "Oh yes, oh no." And that person is thinking it'll take 20 minutes to just rattle out those thoughts in a nice little concise three paragraph, half a page kind of succinct summary. But then you're spending like 5 hours over the weekend outside of work, poring over it, trying to do it, and then it's not done until Tuesday, and your boss is kind of like, "What's wrong, Sanjay? Are you not interested in me proposing this good idea of yours?" But it's quite the contrary. You're right into it. You've spent tons of time, but you're late on sending it out. I don't know if this relates to you at all, but I felt it myself, and I think there are other people who feel it like that. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I reflect back on my career even before. So currently, that might help, is I'm a director, national proposal development in a pretty big healthcare company in the United States, and where most of our business, so these are not just reports, but most these are proposals, requests for proposals. So my department coordinate, and I'm accountable, and I lead a function that brings a significant revenue to our organization. So these proposals are the first step in getting the business, which is multi-billion dollar business, right? So in different customers, so they have to be very succinct and presented in a way so they are present our value proposition and well organized. So I started. Right now I don't do too much writing actually, but I'm reviewing, I'm looking at for the content, I'm looking for the vision and that part. But I started in this department writing these proposals, and exactly, like a proposal, they where it will take someone 1 hour, I'm working exactly, off time and just making sure they're good, using different techniques. I learned to develop. I had like a long notes. I just call notes or cheat sheet, where so similar kind of things. I put it there. So spell check verified, and I just took that and put it there. Some other compensatory technique to overcome my thing. So I developed some of those techniques to go over. But over the years, it So some of those, and exactly apart from the proposal, we, you know, other projects also come up, you know, on writing and reading, and you're so right. You know, I was smiling when we were talking about it. So I have these creative, my brain is fired all the time, right? With new ideas, how to do things better, how to be innovative. And the next step is put it on the writing. And that's where I just melt.
Yes.
Like, oh my God, what did I say? Why, you know, it was like a torture internal. So,
And I think so many people, like, often it's like you've said it once and it's like a chef who's made something spontaneously and you go, that is absolutely fantastic, what's the recipe? And you're like, oh, I can't remember, you know. And I think that's why it's so important to be self-aware enough of your different way of thinking that you put in place strategies in advance. Like, maybe you record meetings, because sometimes you just have a personal audio recording of a meeting with handwritten notes that you can then say, gosh, yes, I did make a decent proposal then. I'm just going to cut out that audio, transcribe it, and then edit it down, and then that's it off, rather than rethinking it or re-saying it or whatever. You know, there's, I'm not saying everyone has to do that, but if you know that you're in a particular function and role and then you have to deal with it. I mean, for instance, there's a speech-to-text software called Otter, and it will automatically transcribe every Zoom meeting you're in and put it into your notes. And so if there's a chunk of text of what someone said or you said or a proposal, you can cut that out, put it into an email, clean it up and send it off. And it saves you lots of time. Now, I'm not saying everyone has to go and do that, but the point is, if you know you've got a particular difficulty or challenge in an area, you put in strategies in place. What kind of strategies? You talked about this cheat sheet. Well, yeah. I'm just imagining, you know, pro forma paragraphs of things you've written before, and you've got a whole catalog of them, kind of like school teachers do when they're writing children's school reports. I did that when I was a school teacher. Every teacher does it, you know. All right, they're going to get the, you know, contributes very effectively in class when asked questions and puts forwards good ideas. But then they're also going to get could do better when it comes to homework exercises or whatever. And you've got, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. So that, and then, you know, I noticed the pattern in different proposals and things I was doing. So then I said, you know, so these are repeating pattern, you know, so on the questions being asked and things like that. So I put a lot of effort in perfecting those responses and created like a template for me that I can use it. So I have less spelling, grammar mistakes, you know. So that was one strategy at work I used. The other, you know, I experimented with the, so now with the, a little recorder, but in California for my notes, you know, so I have a little voice
dictaphone.
Recorder. Yeah, dictaphone. Yeah. Yes. So that I did, but in California, like a lot of these meetings, now it's becoming more popular to record it. Like I have a now capability in Microsoft Teams, which we use for work. So there's a possibility of recording meetings and transcribing it. But before, like a couple of years ago, that was not a, you know, very known possibility. If you say, oh, I'm going to record the meeting, people freak out, right? So they say, what? And California, you need to have a permission to record, right? In those kind of meetings, work meetings. So it felt like a, you know, people would, a little difficult, you know, out of the ordinary to call out for recording. You know, for my notes, I would just, I can record the meetings, but I could afterwards or before I would talk in my dictaphone and then listen to it again. So, you know, to remind me what I was thinking. So those are some of the strategies I've used. You know, another interesting thing I want to point out, Darius, is some of the meetings, you know, very high profile or strategy meeting, I was given a task of a note taker,
Yes.
And a lot of people, they just open a notepad and they just do it right on the meeting and done, right? So for me, it was after I would take a bullet point notes or little doodles and whatever I could, because my handwriting is also, I also have dysgraphia, like handwriting is not very great. So it's really hard for me to read also and pay attention. Both the things are really hard. So I'll do something and then I'll go and look at those figures and some pictures and some doodles and some little clouds, and that are kind of jog my memory. Okay, that's what that person was saying. That's what that, so it's kind of a little, and it took me afterwards, probably someone who takes it right there in 5 minutes, it takes me hours to make it clear, because those are going to leadership notes.
Yes.
And yeah.
So you're dealing with multiple billions of pounds worth of income coming through your own department within the company. You've got a team of people that you're supervising. So there's some high stakes involved here. And you've got to a position where people would be envious of your position and role. But looking back and reflecting, what could life have been like if you had known about your dyslexia earlier?
Yeah, so I think I, let me take you back to where I come from. So I grew up in India, and I worked in South Asia for nonprofits, international development projects, work there. And there was no concept of, and it's remote part, small town in the Himalayas. That's where I grew up. My schooling and everything was there, and there was no concept of learning disability, or either something or you're a good student or bad student, right? So very simple distinction. Or you may get categorized as a lazy student. You may say, okay, he is a bright student, but I don't know, he doesn't work hard, those kind of things, or he's mischievous, because, or he's just making trouble. So, the one of some of those simple classification, no one really paid attention to any learning differences. And now I'm really happy there are more awareness there in India as well. So hindsight, first step, all those in India, very competitive schooling. It's you have an entrance exam. I wanted to go into other professional areas, engineering, perhaps gone into medical, but all the entrance exams are designed, for people, some are multiple choices and where you can do, but some are writing. A lot of it is involved writing, and that's the very first barrier. If I had known at that time, I would have found a strategies to overcome that. So right from the get-go, put me in a disadvantage. Then
Yeah.
moving into the jobs, a lot of the so I was fortunate enough to got into a number of top universities for do higher education, and part of me scared me, about the writing part. So like a lot of them, they so I kind of made a case with my university where I got admitted. I said, I will not do the write for the I did the statement of purpose, but I said I'm not going to take the GRE or other things, and I justified why. I said I have enough experience, I can demonstrate other ways to convince you I'm capable of pursuing this, from my life experiences, and they waived, some of those requirements. So,
Fantastic.
yeah.
So
So,
those requirements were waived to get into the university, or
into
were
the
they
university.
waived for the final accreditation?
No, just to waive in getting into the university, right? But I that time also I was not aware of, that I could get help. So I
Yes.
kind of I dread it. You know, some part of his circumstances I was not able to pursue. I would have pursued, you know, but part of me is a heavy part of me was writing was scared. You know, I was scared. It was like a scary monster, you know, when I was going to get to there. So
So
those
you
are,
were going to do a PhD at that point, were you? Yeah.
PhD and Master of Professional MPH in International Development. And so those were a couple of things,
And you
you know,
didn't
unfinished.
complete them. Did you start them? Did you com
I doctoral, I started my in the University of Vienna. I started that,
My
but
goodness,
the
because I've got a student, I've got a person I'm coaching at the moment who is doing a PhD at the University of Vienna as well. She's in Vienna right now as we speak. So you didn't complete that one because of the fear of the whole writing of the dissertation, etc.
Yeah, that was one of the part of the big reason. Part of was you know, of moving to the US at that same time,
Okay.
but a major part was it was scaring me, you know, how I'm
Yes.
gonna write, right? So that's about my education part, right? And then getting into the job side. So a lot of these, because I am always fascinated, and intrinsic motive is to help others, right? So I was especially in the developing and underprivileged areas. So a lot of these required, in order to get a grant, in order to lead this organization, you have to articulate the needs and
Yes,
on a
another
paper,
report.
reports and proposals to get the
Proposals. Yes.
money and periodically submit to your donors, you know, or funders.
Yes.
This is the progress you're making. So that was, you know, I did that, but that was a struggle. That was a
Isn't
lot of
that
struggle.
fascinating? That's so fascinating because the area of nonprofit and social enterprise is an area that attracts a lot of people with dyslexia because people with dyslexia are natural problem solvers, and the area of nonprofit is often there to solve a big problem within a certain sector. And so it's just fuel for the fire of a dyslexic mind to solve those problems. And yet you get then caught up in that loop of, now we need to do another funding application. Let me tell you an interesting story about that. I know a woman here in the UK. She's in charge of a charity. And as part of being in charge of the charity, she has to do applications for funding applications. And she has to do maybe 6 to 10 a year for different aspects of the organization. So I said to her, how long does it take you to do one funding application? And she said, 3 days. And I was like, well, fair enough. I mean, 3 days seems pretty reasonable to me. I said, so how long would it take you to do a funding, would it take you to do a funding application if you were doing it with someone else? And she said, well, that funny you say that because a week ago I sat down to do a funding application and we did it in 2 hours. I said, oh, hold on a minute. Did you tell that other person what to do in those 2 hours and they went away and spent 2.5 days doing the rest of it and you delegated it? She said, no, we completed it in 2 hours. Now, this is just a fascinating example of dyslexia in action because the reason why it took her 3 days to do it is because she would be on her computer and she would click onto this case study, and then she'd say, all right, we need to put that case study over here. She'd go and click on there. And while she was clicking on the next place, her working memory is smaller than other people's, so that she kind of lost track a little bit, and then she had to go back and just check, and then, oh yeah, go back. And there's lots of this going back and forward. Whereas when she was sitting in the meeting with this person, she would go, right, there was that case study over there. And they go, oh, yeah, I found it, right. Yeah, we need to put that into this part of the document. Oh, and the person put it there. And then there was that, remember we did this, remember that, remember this. Oh, we could incorporate, and she just pull it all together. And this person is integrating it and typing it out and so on. And boom, that application's done in 2 hours. Have you had any experiences like that?
Yeah. So, again, I was smiling because it took me back. Mind works creative and also, problem solver, innovative. I see opportunities where people see problem, right? So I say, okay, we can do this like this, look, do this like this, right? So 60,000 thoughts come at the moment. And so we have an internal program. It's called Innovation Program. MSSA Innovates in our company. And I have been, for a number of my lot of the company employees, they submit these innovation ideas, and top ideas, they get rise to the top, and then you have to do presentation to put it in a very succinct way, 5 minutes or 6 minutes or 10 minutes, and present it to thousands of people. So I have these great ideas. So what I do is I was fortunate enough to have a wonderful people to work with me, in my same department and over the years. So I remember a couple of people, so one time I have this idea, top idea. It was about mental health, because I was telling my story and my struggle with anxiety and some of the mental health, and I wanted to make it awareness at workplace to tell my story and say, these are same as physical elements. There's nothing different. It's just the affected part is your happen to be your brain, right? So we have to be aware about it. So it was a story, my story, and I have to tell in a very succinct way. So that was one time. So I had Mr. Brian Mahoney, so who used to work with me, really great friend and a colleague. So we sat together and I said, I had this great idea. Can you help me? So I was, he said, yeah, sure. He's a journalist background and he's a great writer. And I said, okay, let me talk and these other things. And he would write it, right? And we are done in a succinct way, this story. And there was another time I was doing same, another innovation idea, which I was struggling to put in a place. I had the idea, I have talked it out loud, but when I open a PowerPoint to put it down there, Darius, you wouldn't believe it. It was like blank slate. It was like a one slide open there, and I put a title and I'm just waiting. And ideas are there in the brain. But it's like I'm frozen. It's not flowing from here to my hand. So but then again, Brian also, he and another great friend, Dasha Mohuli, Dasha Ray. So these two were my kind of a coach. I said, hey, you are my email coach. You are my writing coach. If if I have a high stake something or high thing, would you be kind enough to take a look? And so
Oh,
they
fantastic. I
really
love that
helped.
term. I love that term, a writing coach. That's
Or email
fantastic
code.
because,
Yeah, so.
yeah, email coach, yes. Because it, I mean, I do that. I find, do you ever find this, that you can actually do that for someone else,
Yeah.
but you can't do it for yourself?
Yeah,
So my
absolutely.
daughter, who's got dyslexia, is kind of stressed out about writing a little application for a flat or something. And I'll go, right, okay, let's just map it out. And then we've created a little mind map. And then let's just talk through the mind map. And I'll type out what you say. And then boom, it's done within half an hour rather than 2 or 3 hours. But then if I do it for myself, it's so much harder. You know? Do you find that sometimes the role can reverse, that you sometimes do it for other people and yet you're dyslexic?
Absolutely. In my role, my day job, where I'm a director, so I do quality assurance. So that means I'm reviewing, some of the what my team has written. So I read it, and I read it in the sense that I can edit it. I can fix you. I can make a sense. I can polish it. I can present a great idea. Tell our story better. Or someone else has written,
Yes.
material. It's much
Yes.
easier to do that.
Yes.
So, and that I learned early on, right? My kids helped me. I said, hey, for the personal stuff, I said, hey, I have to write this. I have these th four things. Can you come help me?
Oh,
And I,
fantastic.
yeah, my daughter and my son, so they were also at home. my writing coach or my editor.
Isn't that fascinating though? I mean that's just so fascinating because it's so easy to say to someone, just it's so easy to pigeonhole dyslexia and just say, oh well, you got dyslexia, then you can't read and write. And you're like, well, no, I can read and write okay. All right, okay. So you got dyslexia, so you can't do this and that. And you go like, you can't write reports. And you're like, well, no, I can actually write reports. I can actually edit reports. I can actually, but then there's certain aspects where there's like a little chasm. And I often notice this with students, children, and adults. And I often do this with them. And I say, look, all we're going to do is find the moment where you trip over and fall down a pit. Because sometimes you're doing a maths equation or something, and you know the maths equation completely, and you can do the maths. But then when you're going through the written statement of the question, there's one word or a phrase or whatever that just confuses you a little bit. And every time you hear it, you start guessing, oh, I think it's that, or I think it's that. And then you don't get the answer right, or 50-50 on the answer right. But if you wind it back and just slow motion it to that moment where that person trips, and often what happens is they trip into this gap. There's just like this little gap, and they fall down that gap and they get stuck in it. And all you need to do is put like a plank down, they can step over that plank and it's no problem. And so it's identifying those. So instead of saying, oh, you can't write, or you can't read, or you can't, do these sorts of things, it's like, actually, I can. I just need to cross these little pits, or what would you call it? Pitfalls, or gaps, or cliffs, with a little plank or a little bridge, and that bridge can grow over time, over use. It becomes a big platform that you can drive a truck over without worrying about it, but it just grows over time. And that's what you're describing there, isn't it? Like
Yeah,
you've
exactly.
identified unconsciously those moments, and what you've done is you've brought a person who's kind of held your hand while you stepped over that chasm.
And they, so we, exactly, so, and then the other thing is one thing, that might be useful to say is once I know I have something, or, so I'm not scared to talk about it. I'm not scared to admit, I need help. Asking for help is a, I always think is a sign of a strength. So to
Do you think you've been confident to ask for help? Well, you've just been identified with dyslexia formally, what, a matter of months?
yeah, matter of months,
How
yeah.
long's it been?
It's
Matter of
like
months, a few.
formally, not even weeks,
A few
not
weeks.
even,
Okay. So a few weeks ago, you formally recognized you had dyslexia with an assessment and ADHD. But what's interesting about you, Sanjay, is you were willing to ask for help. And sometimes we're not willing to ask for help. And that can be the difference between success and failure. And sometimes those people who don't ask for help can feel a failure and then become a failure, as it were, and fail in that task because that proposal never gets written and never gets acted on, or that idea doesn't get into the hands of the right person, or that certification doesn't get passed, so they don't become a doctor or a lawyer or whatever. I mean, I was just speaking to a consultant, medical consultant, who is now an assessor, and I met him on a train going up to Edinburgh, and he was there to assess other students and grade them. And then I said, I run a company that helps people with dyslexia in the workplace and at school. And he was like, actually, I've got dyslexia, but I didn't tell anyone until 5 years ago, until I knew my job was completely secure. And so now he's open about it, but until he felt secure. But what's interesting is you started to ask for help, and I'm intrigued by that. I'd like to know more about that because it takes a certain amount of confidence to ask for help.
Yeah, I built trust with people. So
Yes.
trust, and I always treat people with respect, you know. So respect, trust goes a long way. And with the individual, you know, I can't ask, you know, anyone walking down the street, but people I work with, I am open, you know. The step to build a trust: be open and be authentic. Interestingly enough, a couple of people I mentioned, they were, you know, at point, my one person was my kind of the person who was my superior and then became my direct report. And the other person was also my direct report. So it's kind of a further stigma to, you know, admitting to your, you know, people who you supervise that, you know, you
Yes.
are, you have writing, you're working in a writing department and you don't, you are struggle with it, right? So, but right, so they, because they say, oh, you are director, you should know better, you are a better writer. Not necessarily, you know, everyone. So I was open with them. I authentically, I said, you know, hey, I'm so glad you have the strong strength, because I look for people in my team who can complement each other, right? So you compliment me, you know, in
Yes.
writing, in my work. And this is where I struggle. Would you be kind enough to, it's not a order, but it's a kind enough to, it's a request. Would you be kind enough to help me, you know, on these, you know, crucial communications, or my emails when I send out, or coach me where I think miss. So they, one person, oh, you again missed the, you know, punctuation. Oh, you again missed the D or R or article, or, you know, what's going on, Sanjay? Like, you know, so I said, I don't know. That's why I need your help. So
Yes.
that
And
is,
now you do know. What
yeah.
difference has it made to you now that you do know?
Yeah. So it's kind of funny, you know, when I started took the online, you know, like the formal diagnosis was just a few weeks ago, but that made by dyslexia and the link I took, the online assessment were a while back. I, you know, once I got that, I first people I call them, I said to those two people, you know, I mentioned, I said, you know what, you are you surprised? I think I have dyslexia. They said, no surprise.
Isn't it funny how the people around about you know that you have it before you sometimes? Yes?
No
Yeah.
surprise. Yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
So
Tell me, you know, you're from India, and have you heard of the movie made in by Bollywood about dyslexia? What's the Indian pronunciation of it? Tare Zameen
Tare
Par.
Jameen Par.
And it's like stars on Earth. Is that a direct translation?
Tare is stars. Jameen is, you know, the earth. Yeah, so stars on earth. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a brilliant movie. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have seen it. Yeah.
When did you see it?
It's been a while ago. But yeah, that also I connected with that movie. You know, I could relate. But, you know, it was describing more on reversing, a little bit dramatized, you know. But yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating. So
Yeah.
that's really interesting with regard to adult dyslexia, and I think it's worth talking a bit about that. You talked about reversing letters and moving letters and things like that. I discounted myself from having dyslexia because letters did not jump up and down for me. They stayed still. Now, it's a myth. I now realize that only about 2% of people who are identified for diagnosed with dyslexia actually see letters jump up and down. The other 98% don't see letters jump up and down. The letters stay still, but they have dyslexia, and it's because they process the words differently, and it's the decoding aspect of it. This letter jumping up and down thing is only one small effect of dyslexia on one small proportion of people who have dyslexia. And so a ton of people, I think, discount themselves from thinking they've got dyslexia because they say, well, first of all, I can read. Second of all the letters don't move around for me, so I can't have dyslexia. How far from the truth that is. Are you one of those people who had discounted yourself because of that? Could you explain a bit more?
So I was, like in that movie and other information, whatever I heard, that's the other, I think, going back to your earlier question, what prompted this time dyslexia, made by dyslexia. So I think that could be, and so I did not have, occasionally I reversed some B and D's and, some little bit, but it was not like the 100% of the time. What I have done in the past is in my mind, when I'm typing, I have written the whole sentence, but later when I read it or go back or someone read it, so it's missing. Part of it is missing. It was all on my brain. I thought I typed it, but it never got there, if
Yes,
that makes sense.
yes,
But
yes.
reversing, like, and then sometime, like I'm saying 3964, but what I was writing is 3694 or something. Those things happen, but not like I was not jumping letter or anything. So I discounted.
Yes.
I said I might have something, but it can't be dyslexia. It may not be just, so it wasn't like, but yeah. So those movie Tare Zameen Par, it's just aspect of the jumping letter, it talks about. Yeah,
Yes, yes.
still fascinating.
I mean, he's clearly dyslexic, and it's just an incredible movie, and I highly recommend it. It's got 8.4 stars on IMDb, for example. It's really worthwhile listening for anyone watching. Go check it out on Netflix. I think it's on Netflix or Amazon, but you'll definitely find it on YouTube as well. The whole movie, it's very worthwhile watching. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. So, what advice would you give to other managers, directors, people who are in some managerial, executive, business role that you're in, who have maybe thought, oh, I might be a little bit dyslexic, but then, discounted it? Because often it's like, well, I can read now, my school days are behind me, etc. What relevance is it for me to be, to identify, diagnose myself with dyslexia or not? What would your answer be to that? What's the point of knowing in later life? We're in our fifth, I'm guessing I'm in my 50s. I'm not sure how old you are, sorry.
I'm 56.
Okay, we're in our 50s. Good. I didn't put my foot in it there. What's it worth knowing that you have dyslexia in your 50s when you've got a career, you're past all of that, in inverted commas? What would your answer be?
So I'll tell you one incident, and then I'll come to that question because it's important, right? So work related, because a lot of the times if you move up or even in other positions within a workplace, you have to go write sometime publicly, for things so I will tell you a little very short story. One time, which I never forget, I was in a leadership meeting, our leadership senior extended leadership meeting, we call it. So that where our senior vice president and his direct reports and their direct reports. So skip level meeting. So we go offsite, and we were in one venue because it's my memory. Some of these are like captured in time. So we were there, and we were there was a leadership conversation going on, and one of the team building thing was writing on a wall, what are you, would you think what people see as your great strength on the wall, right? So everyone, all the leaders will go in front of everyone and they'll write something. And my turn came. So a lot of people perceive me as a very calm person. So I went there and I wrote calm there. But actually, the spelling I wrote was clam on the
Oh,
wall,
okay.
clam. So my senior VP, I still not forget, he is a very kind person, but he said, "You meant you really wanted to write clam?" I said, "No, it's calm." So he said, "Yeah, it's, so he corrected the spelling or something, So those, knowing that, some of those you can avoid those embarrassed. I was so embarrassed by that. It was a very embarrassing moment for me in the, with in front of everyone, right? So, and I'm a proposal writer, and I lead people of team, so I'm thinking, what is my, he's gonna think about, I can't do my work right. A lot of those other fear things come up. But so that's a story. That's why I thought in work connection. But I think for in the UK, it's I what I hear is there's a much more awareness. US, there's not much awareness still in the workplace. It's a stigma to talk about dyslexia and other things. So we are getting open to talk about mental health, in last few years openly at workplace. But I think there's a use this having a diagnosis, use it as a strength to help other and be bold at the workplace. Also say be proud to say, I have a learning differences. I learn differently. And buying more and more people speaking about it. So the workplace will also listen to it, and they'll take it seriously that how they can utilize these brilliant people to solve problem and put them in a place and in a environment, supportive environment, then they can really harness their true potential. So I, if in my organization, if someone I keep trying to get job in an innovation area or something where I can create things, if organization have seen a strength to leverage me in that area, I would have be in a next phase in my life. I would have probably be more created more value for the organization. So it's turning this into a strength for your employer, and for yourself. Just knowing there is just last few months of this journey, it gave me internal peace, coming to terms with it, that it's okay, and I'm different, I learn differently. I am at this point proud of my dyslexia, to be able to, be able to put a name to it. And I'm looking for help in that journey. I reached out to, I explored your bullet map academy, because now I know there's a name and there are ways I can be do things better. And I'm bringing that awareness to my kids. I talk with them. I said, hey, guess what? Dad got diagnosed with dyslexia. Cheers. And now you know why I used to ask you to edit and help me with the writing.
That's
So,
great. That's
yeah.
great. You know, what it brings up is I think sometimes it's really helpful to that clam story, for example. If you knew about your dyslexia, you would say, apologies, I've got dyslexia, which means I'm really great at report writing, analyzing the meaning of the report, the purpose of the report, the big picture of the report, the strategy of the report. But sometimes when it comes to the smaller details of word reversal, things like that, the dyslexia can get in the way. And so you framed it firstly with the strengths that come from the dyslexia, with the tale of some of the difficulties, the small difficulties that can trip you up. And so you can actually help reframe it for other people by leading with the strength, the corresponding strength to that weakness that's being exhibited on a low-grade clerical task.
All the jobs I look back, I was most successful, or most, when someone say, when you were at your best. When I was at my best was where I had a someone partner with me, thought partner or someone who can help with the clerical or these kind of tasks for me, and I can give the, when I was in a leadership position with the support, I
Yes.
was fantastic. I could multiply my strength 10, 15 times, productivity and everything, so having a right partnership is very important. And
Yes.
knowing this can help you explore those those mutually benefiting partnerships.
I wonder how it affects people who are self-employed with dyslexia. Like, I'm self-employed or I have a small team now, but if you're solo and everything sits on you, then you don't have that, do you?
No, but now in the virtual world, you can probably explore virtual assistant,
Yes.
or some there are other ways, or finding, having openness with the friends or some other people. I think it's just it may be a little difficult, not that easy, but possible,
Yes, the virtual world does open it up. I mean, I've done exactly that and found some virtual assistants, and I've now a virtual team. Can we just finish off with the mental health side of things? Because you've been open about some of your historic difficulties with mental health and now dyslexia. And I have a theory. And I want to run it by you and see if it's affecting, it plays out in your life. My theory is that sometimes we treat the symptoms of dyslexia in terms of physical illnesses and mental illnesses, and we think we're dealing with the problem, but the actual problem is dyslexia. For example, for me, I had eczema in my younger years, and eczema is often caused by stress. It's not caused by stress. It's often worsened by stress or triggered by stress or exacerbated by stress. And I think I was so stressed at school that it was stressing out my body that it came out in my skin. And so I was in hospital getting all that treatment, etc. And no one was doing anything about dyslexia at all. They just thought I had some language difficulty because I had an Iranian background, half Iranian, half Scottish. And they think, oh, it's just because he's got some language difficulties because of the second language thing. And it wasn't. It was dyslexia, I knew 35 years later. And I think for some people, their weakness is a physical weakness. It might be their skin, it might be their stomach, it might be a heart issue, it might be anxiety, it might be depression, and those are all sort of pressure points of that person's makeup, and their dyslexia affects that and triggers it off. What's your take on that?
So you're absolutely right. So everything I believe is connected. As I said, mind is a fascinating thing, right? Mind and our brain connected. So it's kind of can be a circle. So I also have diabetes, right? So which is stress related. A lot of it becomes a stress. So anxiety, if you think about in a sense, I am in a position of writing and work, demanding on the work side. It put a stress on me, and I sometimes taking longer than other people to do that kind of task. That also impacts, could impact one's self-worth and self-worth and self-confidence, confidence, and that could take to perform, like anxiety, I'm not able to perform well, anxiety, causing anxiety. And if the deadline comes closer and closer and you have to submit, that could trigger panic. And if this cycle continues to happen without breaking it or finding a mitigation, it could lead also end up leading to some depression area, right? And dyslexia could also be confused with bipolar. It could, because they have all these multiple thoughts going on, and if you explain someone, they could say, oh, they have, manic or something. So this, it's a very fascinating, in my mind, it's a knowing your learning differences could really push you to evaluate or look at second look at your mental health and diagnosis. And there is, so just to I know we are towards the end of our time, but that's the kind of in long time back, over a decade ago, I turned into mindfulness to break that cycle, because mindfulness can help a little bit of training and breaking that stress cycle, right? So and that's what I promote also at the workplace. So absolutely. So and that those stress, when it's on your creates, it shows up on your body. It shows up in, you know, for me, it whenever I see a direct relationship with my diabetic, you know, the blood sugar numbers, whenever that happens, you know, you can see it fluctuate straight.
It's going to be fascinating to hear your story over the next year or two to see, you know, I have a hunch, Sanjay, that you will find more tools and techniques that can depressurize those points. And you'll realize that, oh my goodness, my dyslexia isn't just affecting report writing. It's affecting the way I talk and communicate ideas in a meeting, because sometimes the way people dyslexia talk in a meeting changes depending on whether you're just talking or if there's a whiteboard involved or a visual involved. And it's a fascinating difference. So if there's no visuals involved and all they're doing is talking, often a person with dyslexia will end up talking in circles and spiral around a discussion, and everyone else is sitting in the meeting going, you've already said that, but you're saying it in a slightly different way or whatever. Why is he saying it again? What's happening? And they start getting a bit confused. But the moment you put it into a picture, whiteboard, picture, diagram, the person with dyslexia often answers the questions and becomes more succinct much more rapidly and gets the point rapidly. And the reason why is working memory. When you put all the ideas down as a picture or a diagram on a whiteboard or a diagram, the person in the meeting doesn't have to hold all of those ideas in their working memory, and it releases their working memory to process the next decision-making stage. And they're not just juggling all these thoughts by talking them out all the time to keep them in the air, as it were. It's already in the air because it's on the board. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, so we do some feedback of 360, right? Getting a feedback from various, my direct reports, my peers, other people I work with. So common thread, you know, on those critical feedback has been, you know, sometime they are kind, you know, kind to say sometime they say we lose him in the conversation. Right. So that's the common thread I do. And I find myself, and I have good self-awareness, I catch myself, you know, I'm going in circle. Now I have to stop talking. So that's a very common day-to-day struggle. You know, when I'm just face-to-face meeting or something like that. And the other big part is, it also gets, you know, like a communication challenges in, you know, to the extent, like, you know, you wonder, there's something wrong, you know, so there's something wrong. Like I remember one of my discussion with the, because I went through an accelerated leadership program, and in that we have to identify one of your areas of working, individual development area where you work. And it, when we did this 360 and get, you know, everyone's feedback, it was pretty clear the theme was communication, right? Communication came out as the area of working, which I have been working over the years. You know, I worked with my executive coach on to be comfortable speaking in front of the large audience. So I'm comfortable. I can talk now in front of live, but I cannot follow a script. I have general idea, but then I have to do my own thing. So, but at the same time, like the communication theme. So I was talking with my previous managers and, you know, one of the performance discussion, I said, you know, he was saying, you know, you need to learn to succinctly present your idea. I said, I don't know what, but I think I have something going on in my brain that clear, but I'm not able to articulate it right in few words. I have to go in circle. And I have been kind of it's my journey to kind of improve my communications. But now I know, so knowing
Yes.
is powerful, right?
Is it interesting? Interesting. And that's just one of the things that I would suggest would be there's many more, but I won't go into huge depth here. But one thing I would suggest, Sanjay, is if you have a direct report who's reporting to you, that you insist that they always bring a visual. And you say, could you please bring one sheet of paper with all of the points listed on them as a bullet point, or an agenda, or a diagram, or a flow diagram, or a mind map, or some graphic, something that just visually, and if you don't, could you please write it down on a piece of paper while we're talking? So even on Zoom, in my team, I always insist with my team, it's like, if you're going, we're doing a stand up, please share your screen and share some bullet points at the very least, or a diagram or something, a drawing, a mind map, so that what happens is it relieves my working memory, so I'm even more present for that person rather than juggling the sixth thought or the sixth point, because my working memory's size is three. I can take three ideas, juggle them until I have to write one of them down to take in a new one, or I delete it. So you either take those three ideas in, you delete one for something better, or you take one away and take it, put it in notes, and it releases a space. And most people have a working memory of somewhere between five and seven. And so when people are conversing, they naturally start talking about four or five points before they revert to, oh, we better start taking some notes down, or writing it on the whiteboard or something like that. Because everyone's working memory gets overwhelmed. But it normally gets overwhelmed at five to seven main points, whereas yours will be two or three.
That's fascinating. So that's the connection, with the multiple step direction. I guess even when I'm going somewhere, I if it's more than three turns,
Yes. Oh
forget it,
gosh, yes. That's right.
forget it.
And what happens is, remember the old days where someone would stand there and they go, right, you're going to go down this road and you're going to take a left and you can nod, yeah. And then you go along and you get to the pub and you take a right, yeah, I'm with you. And then when you go along there, you'll get to the bridge and you go over the bridge and then you'll take another right straight away. And it's at that point you start nodding, and inside you're going, oh no, shaking your head. But you're nodding, oh yeah, I've got it. Yeah, I've got it. And this is an interesting dilemma, okay? Because what your working memory is doing at that point is it's deciding, should I remember the first three stages, or should I remember the bit about the bridge and then turning right? Because your brain's going, I think I could get to the bridge without those directions, so I'm just going to delete them, and I'm going to use my working memory for the bit after the bridge. And that's what your working memory is doing all the time for every single person in the world. But if you've got a smaller working memory, you've got a smaller set that you're working with. And so that's the point you say, hey, look, could you just write this down for me? I've got a bit of paper. Can I just write them down? And that's what you need to do. And that's what needs to happen in nearly every single meeting. If you get behind 2 points, past 2 points, and you're going to discuss more than 2 points, it needs to become visual. Otherwise, they won't get the most from you.
And it's funny when, growing up in India and other places, there are no addresses like that. Now they are like Google Map and all that. Back then, it was always, those go this way, that way. So I think that's fascinating because maybe in my subconscious, because when we were going somewhere, I relied on, okay, so first two, three step. And then I relied and I was on asking people all the time.
Yes.
So that
So
made
you
me
do the
come.
first three steps, you get to the bridge, and then you go, I can't remember where it was after the bridge, so I'll ask someone at the bridge.
Someone else.
Yeah.
So asking for help, I think it may be in my subconscious.
Yes.
I got to places asking by, you know, I still do with my kids, and they say, "You're embarrassing me, Dad. You know, what are you doing?" I just stop with a stranger somewhere, like we were in France and we were getting lost or something, Paris. And I stopped and I started asking people, and they were
Yes.
saying, "Dad, you're impressing. There's a Google Map for that." I said, "That's okay,
Fantastic.
but reading Google Map also could be challenging sometime
Yes, it
for
can be.
people like me." So,
I have a Tesla, and the Tesla map, okay.
yeah,
I don't know. Do you have a Tesla by any
I have
chance?
Tesla
You
too.
have a Tesla as
Yeah.
well. The Tesla map, it's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, oh, it turns around and that's it.
And
And
it doesn't zoom in enough, and you realize when you do the Google Map how much care in the user experience, the UX, is just incredible. It's just so subtle. And it's only once you've got something like, I mean, Tesla's a fantastic car, it's a great map, but it's not as good as Google, that's for sure. And so I have to put my Google Maps up, because when you get to a key moment, Google zooms in slowly into that moment. And as you get to that point of crucial moment, it zooms in even more. And then you realize, oh, this is the time I have to turn. Whereas with Tesla, you're like, is it in 100 yards? Is it now? I'm not quite sure. And then you miss it. But and someone in Tesla is saying, but we wrote it up the top and it says 20 yards. And 0 yards. Why didn't you go? And I'm like, I don't read words, I read pictures. You know? And so that person in Tesla who's designing this doesn't realize how valuable that subtle, sudden zooming in at the moment of decision is, that is on Google Maps, that is non-existent on Tesla. Well, it's not non-existent. Tesla does it slightly more subtly, whereas Google emphasizes it. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I can turn. I need to turn now. How important that is.
Yes, those small things make a big, huge difference in day-to-day life, you know.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, isn't it fascinating? Made by dyslexia. So the iPhone was made by dyslexia. Steve Jobs was dyslexic. Johnny Ives, who designed the actual phone, is dyslexic from the UK, went to art school and design school in the UK, and I bet you a ton of other people in iPhone and Apple are dyslexic because they value the visual cues so much more than the verbal cues. The verbal cues are important, but the visual max out on everything. And that's why when you design for people who think visually, like dyslexia, and symbolically, like dyslexia, people who are looking for patterns, looking for pictures, then you actually design for everyone. And your
That's so
product gets better.
better.
Well, it's been great, Sanjay, chatting
Likewise.
with you. We've come to our end of our time. If people want to connect with you in some way, Sanjay, how would they do that?
So right now I am on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn.
So LinkedIn, Sanjay Kapoor. Sanjay Kapoor.
We'll put it in the show notes. Shall I do that? And then people can connect to you on LinkedIn and
LinkedIn,
ask more. Yeah, great.
And ask more. And you know, I my as I said, my passion is to go and help other people with my experience and people with dyslexia and anxiety and all these. So coach them, help them, you know. So maybe one day I'll get into that journey. So yeah, I am always available for anyone. So
So thanks, Sanjay, for being so transparent and coming and sharing your newly discovered dyslexia, and welcome to the worldwide club of dyslexic problem solvers that you've always been part of, but now you didn't, now you know.
thank you. And it's a pleasure. It was a pleasure speaking with you and getting to know. And I could go for hours, you know.
Yes, yes.
But yeah,
It's a
thank you.
good stop. It's going to be, I'm gonna look forward to connecting with you at least in the next couple of years, next year or two, and just see what your journey's been. Maybe we'll have you back and see what your journey's been over the next year or two as you've
Absolutely.
become the before and after kind of effect. Because isn't it funny? Like you think, well, I'm a little bit more aware, but I guarantee you within a year or two, once you've studied people like Richard Branson and his dyslexia and other people who have dyslexia and the hacks and the advice they use and they share, I remember what it was like. I was like, what's the point? Well, maybe I'll speak, take some advice from some of these people, read books about them and so on. And then I started to implement it and I became more effective in my own life.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much needed at workplace. I have
Yes.
not heard a single person in this company so far
Wow.
that who talk about dyslexia.
Wow. And how big is your company? 250,000
250,000
people?
people. So it's impossible that there no one with dyslexia, because one in how many have
One in
dyslexia?
10 at least
One
have
in 10, right?
dyslexia. Yeah.
But the stigma and attached to it, and the workplace, I think workplace need to do more and have more program. For example, this is a technique, for student you have.
Yes, the mind
Imagine that
mapping, yes.
mind mapping and bullet map,
Bullet
right?
map, yeah.
For kids,
Yeah.
that we could write proposal based on that,
Yes.
those are fascinating thing in the workplace. Some of those tools, if
Yeah.
they open it up, I'm thinking, how do I kind of bring more awareness to my organization, like I did with my mental health.
Yes,
I
yes.
got on the stage and in front of thousands of people, I talked about my mental health, struggles. So to bring awareness. So same thing I want to do to bring awareness to in our organization about dyslexia and learning differences. We just learn differently,
Yeah.
So I think that's needed. And
Oh, that would be great. Then I think, yeah, absolutely do that. And, like at least 25,000 people, let's just do the math. You've got 250,000 people in your organization. 25,000 of them have dyslexia, guaranteed, at least. Of those 25,000, probably 2 to 3% have been identified in school. So we get down to, so you're talking about 2,500 of them know that they have some sort of learning differences. Okay. However, even if they know, of those 2,500, I would say, suggest maybe only 500 of them, one fifth of them, realize that it affects them even in the workplace. Because many people think, oh, well, that affected me at school and school's over, it's not affecting me anymore. They're not denying it, they're just assuming that it's just a school thing. And so out of 250,000 people, there's 500 people who are like, yeah, I've got a learning difference and it affects me in the workplace. So I put in these different strategies to help me and I'm okay because of it. The other 25,000 people minus 500, 24,500. It's affecting them every single day at work. It's probably increasing their anxiety levels. It's probably pressing in on some of their physical or mental weaknesses, health, eczema, anxiety, rashes, maybe more prone to infections because their immune system's being suppressed by it, etc. And they're probably coming home and having less quality time with their family because they're doing more work at home than they should be, because they don't have the coping strategies at work. That means that a job that should take 15 minutes takes 45 minutes, and they've got to do that 10 times in the day. And so they end up with 2 or 3 hours work at home, and the wife's saying, why are you always doing this? or their wife ends up doing it with you, or it affects the weekend and it affects your hobbies, it helps your recreation, time with your family, because you're like, I have to spend Sundays preparing for the week ahead because I've got so much of a backlog. And the story carries on. That's 25,000 people unnecessarily doing that.
Wow. Yeah. If you put it in all those, just, yeah, it's powerful.
And that's just from the personal perspective of the people with dyslexia or ADHD. If you take it from the organizational cost is massive because, number one, there's the opportunity cost, the lost opportunities of letting these people properly shine and using their unique abilities and gifts, because so much of their time is being spent on low-grade clerical work that they haven't got the tools to manage. So there's the lost opportunity, the opportunity costs, and then there's a lot of people who won't put themselves up for promotion for fear of the extra report writing or responsibilities or administration, fear of being exposed for a fraud if they go further up, and all of this sort of mental. So you're and they might even actually quit because they think, oh, I don't think I work here, or I'm not keeping up with other people, etc. And so you're losing really valuable people. Whereas if the organization solved those problems for them, which are really quite easy, quite straightforward to do, they've got loyal employees for a lot longer.
A lot longer, yeah.
We should talk about that a bit more,
Yeah, we should talk about that. And so
Sanjay.
we were supposed to meet 10 minutes and see, like, I'm
Yeah, yeah,
enjoying
yeah. Yeah,
it.
yeah.
Thank
So,
you. Thank you so
thank you
much.
very much for being on the podcast. And thank you very much, guys, for listening. Check out the show notes for things like the things we've referred to, like the movie and references and things like that. And one of the things I'd also say is this episode is sponsored by Dyslexia at Work, which is a company based in the UK, another one that I run that helps people with workplace strategy coaching on how to identify areas that help difficulties, and technology training and strategy coaching that can just help you find those hacks basically that can help you with all of this. So if you're interested in that, there'll be a link below. Thank you, Sanjay.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
See you later.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye. And
This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.